welcome back to the Rare Disorder Podcast. I'm your host, Giovanni, and this is the 8th episode of my Meet a Fighter series, so let's get right into it. So today, I'm going to be addressing the rare condition multiple hereditary exostosis, or commonly known as MHE. One thing I would like to mention is that it has many different names. Hereditary multiple osteochondromas, diaphyseal achalasis, external chondromatosis syndrome, and many more. So, how rare is this condition? This condition is present in 1 in 50K live births. It is a rare genetic condition characterized by multiple benign or non-cancerous bone tumors that are covered by cartilage or osteochondromas, often growing on the end or metaphysis of the long bones of the legs, arms, and digits. These osteochondromas may lead to bone deformities, skeletal abnormalities, short stature, nerve compression, and reduced range of motion. It is inherited as an autosomal genetic dominant condition and is associated with mutations in the EXT1 or EXT2 gene. So, what are some symptoms of this condition? Symptoms include bony tumors covered with cartilage, deformities of the forearm, knees, ankles, spine, and pelvis, mild or short stature, spinal cord compression, and many more. What causes this condition? This condition is inherited as an autosomal dominant genetic condition. So basically, a single copy of an abnormal gene causes it. These are mutations in the EXT1 or EXT2 genes. So how is this condition diagnosed? Diagnosis is based on clinical features, X-ray findings, and family history. To further confirm the diagnosis, the doctor may order molecular genetic testing of the EXT1 and EXT2 genes if they are available. Some related disorders to this condition include Langer-Guidon syndrome and 11p11 deletion syndrome. In addition, another related disorder is metachondromatosis. All of these related conditions are caused by unusual mutations in genes. So, what are some therapies or treatment options? Surgery to relieve pain, improve movement, and restore normal circulation is available. In addition, malignant degeneration of a tumor can be treated surgically. Continuously monitoring the size of affected bones by annual scans to screen for malignant degeneration is a procedure doctors commonly do. In addition, genetic counseling is available for people with this condition. Now I am so excited to welcome Marie, who is a fighter of multiple hereditary exostosis, or MHE. I am so excited to have you on my podcast today. To start, I was wondering if you could talk about an average day in your life with this rare condition.
Yeah, of course. Thank you so much for having me. So I was born with multiple hereditary exostosis. So for me, there's a lot that goes into an average day. I live with hundreds of bone tumors, and I also live with a bunch of random symptoms that only just recently, within the last few years, we found out is related to MHE and the genetic defect that causes. So an average day in my life, some days I'm bent over the toilet, there we go. Some days I'm able to function and I can get my errands done. Most days I rest. I pace myself really slowly. I work on art in bed. It's taken me quite a while to get a good happy medium with learning how to accept being disabled and also living with a rare disease that no one's ever heard of.
Mm-hmm. So is there anything you feel that other people should know about MHE? It can be anything in general or specific or anything like that.
Oh, yeah. The most important thing that people should know about MHE, one, it has a couple of different names. A lot of people kind of think there's a difference if you're a fucking mutation or if it's hereditary. There is no difference. It's still the same condition. And so there's multiple names, multiple osteochondromatitis, hereditary multiple exostosis, multiple hereditary exostosis. They all mean the same thing. You have a heparin sulfate defect, and it causes bone tumors, it causes gastric problems, it causes neurological problems. There's a chance that you're neurodiverse. There's so much that goes into having a heparin sulfate defect, because heparin sulfate is one of the key protein enzymes that are in every single cell. It controls the extracellular communication. So one thing that's really important to know with MAG, a lot of the research out there right now, it says it's a bone disorder. It is not a bone disorder. It is so much deeper than a bone disorder. And that's something that, especially with COVID, the pandemic starting last year, I've been really vocal in making sure that I'm doing my part as an advocate to make sure that people with MAG know they don't just have a bone disorder. It kind of terrified me when the COVID pandemic started, and I was seeing in my communities all these MAG people saying they don't consider themselves high risk because they have a bone disorder. Mm-hmm. Well, you don't have a bone disorder. Your immune system is more optimized. You have so many little nuanced differences from someone without your heparin sulfate defect. And I was so scared, so that's why really I got back into advocacy, because I didn't want anyone with MAG to die out of ignorance, because they could have prevented it.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's really important to understand when you have MAG. There is a lot of research out there, but all of that research focuses on the bone problem. It doesn't talk about the heparin sulfate defect. So it's really important to know that you can, if you don't think a doctor is really listening to you, it's important to know that you should talk to patients about your MAG, talk to other people with the experiences, because honestly, the powers that be that should be expanding this research, they're focused on the wrong thing. So mm-hmm. it's up to us to really make sure that we're getting our quality of life and our treatment that we deserve.
Mm-hmm. So moving on to the next question, how are you coping with MAG?
The best way I cope is through advocacy work. Honestly, there was a long time in my life where I refused to admit that I was disabled, and I lived a double life, basically, because I was able to mask it as much as I could. Once my disfiguring tumors were removed, you couldn't really tell by looking at me. Like, of course you could see scars, but you don't know what the scars come from. And so the way that I coped with it the best was sharing my story. It was so therapeutic. It made me actually be able to embrace who I am, to like confidently try and get better healthcare treatment, because I know I'm not just, it's not all in my head.
Mm-hmm.
So like advocacy work and art is the best coping mechanism I've ever found.
Mm-hmm. And then, have you ever encountered a major struggle with it, and how did you overcome it?
Oh, yeah. I've encountered quite a few major struggles before. I've had two cancer scares in my life, because when you have MAG, there's a higher chance that your tumors will turn cancerous. And so, you know, you just face that head on. There's nothing you can really do. You can't control that situation. You can only control how it affects you and how you feel about it. So I just cope with it by overworking, truthfully. But the biggest obstacle I've ever faced was losing my career to disability discrimination, because I have a rare disease. People don't know I have a rare disease. They don't understand how someone can be so sick yet look okay, how they can be so sick yet still try to function. So I've been accused of lying. I've actually lost my broadcasting career over that. Because people don't understand how one genetic defect can cause a myriad of symptoms, and how you're constantly fighting to just have some semblance of a normal life. And again, advocacy work is how I'm overcoming that. It's been really traumatic. It's almost been a year. And I feel it's hurting me right now. Like, I feel like I'm in a fog just thinking of it, just because this time last year, I was struggling with my job and I was trying to save it. So advocacy work keeps me going, knowing that what happens to me, I have the power to prevent that from happening to someone else. I have the power to make sure people don't have to experience what I experience. That's how I cope with it. Otherwise, I don't know. I wouldn't be able to if I wasn't an advocate.
Okay, so that kind of leads into the next question. If any, what are some initiatives you take to raise awareness for MHE?
A lot of my art, I try to do it subliminally, and I also do it vocally, like, really loud. Like, we have MAG Awareness Week from October 16th to the 22nd. Mm-hmm. And so I always post a lot of stuff about that during MAG Awareness Week. I'm always creating content. I create, because the videos don't exist, because the research doesn't really exist with heparin sulfate, I create it using other research papers that patient advocate researchers have created.
Mm-hmm.
So also with my art, I'm a spooky artist, so I like to draw skeletons and stuff, and I always make sure my skeletons have bumpy bones. It's just like little ways to normalize it.
Mm-hmm.
I have my coloring book, Chronically Spooky, and it's just, you'll find bumpy bones in there, and it's just, I do a lot of little ways to try to normalize it, raise awareness, and to also raise acceptance, because a lot of people with rare disease, it's hard to accept our body, because we're told that it's not right, we're told that it's in our head, and we're also told that disability is a bad thing to be. And so, I do a lot to sharing my story. Every day is like rare disease awareness day for me.
All right, and then I was just wondering if there are any resources you would like to share that you have come across to help other people who are also fighting MHE.
Yeah, so this wonderful person named Dina Larson, she has created the MHE patient handbook, and it's the only research you'll find that is translated into a way that the people who haven't been to college to study all of these terms with biology can understand, and it's done by a patient, and it focuses on heparin sulfate. It not only does it explain like the bone problems that come with MHE, but there's a bunch of research that will explain the systemic symptoms that you can have with MHE, how the heparin sulfate defect affects you, how to advocate for your child's school, because it's a lot harder when you're a kid. It really is. Like when I was a kid, I would always hurt myself, and then I would get new tumors, and then the schools didn't really understand. So it's called MAG Talk, and there's like a tiny URL for it. It's like a Google Doc, so I don't really know the URL, but I'll send it to you, so you can post it with it, and people can always message me for it too. And Google is your best friend when it comes to rare diseases. I know a lot of medical professionals try to gaslight us by saying that we get our Google degree or anything like that that tries to take power away from the patient. But honestly, I've learned so much from researching heparin sulfate and blank, like heparin sulfate and migraine, heparin sulfate and gastric issues. How does heparin sulfate affect the teeth? Just like little things like that, because the powers that be aren't doing that for us. We have to be the ones to display, tie together all of these little symptoms so we can get a better quality of life.
Mm-hmm.
So really, Google is your best friend with that stuff. Don't let any doctor try to discredit you for looking up your own information.
Mm-hmm. And then lastly, I was just wondering if there was anything else you would like to share. It can be general or something specific about MHE. Just anything else you would like to share with my podcast listeners today.
Oh, yeah. So with MHE, like, MHE looks different for everybody. Like, I'm really affected by my heparin sulfate defect. I have hemiplegic migraines. I've lived through two strokes. I'm bedridden a lot. I lose my walking ability a lot, and it's not related to the tumors in my joint. I lose it because of my neurological problem. But the same person with this, like, another person with the same diagnosis, MHE, they might experience something differently. And it's really important to know that just because you experience something in one way, that's not the same thing for everyone with that diagnosis. Last year, when I was really pushing for the heparin sulfate knowledge to be spread, a lot of people tried to discredit my work because they said, well, they have MHE and they're able to live a normal life.
Mm-hmm.
That's so invalidating, because I also have MHE and I've never been able to live a normal life. It's a struggle, you know, and it's like, I'm very grateful that there's some people that haven't been impacted like I have, but I've also really appreciated if those people would understand, we're very lucky, and that is not the same for everybody.
Mm-hmm.
So that would probably be the most important thing to really know. And also, you have MAG, you should just be on top of your body. Don't listen to people telling you that it's not a big deal or that there's no way it could be connected to MAG. My whole life I've been told there's no way my migraines are connected to MAG. And then 2 years ago I found out heparin sulfate defect causes migraines. So it's so frustrating to be told that you're not feeling what you feel. But just know that you do have a rare disease. It's barely known. And most likely a lot of the doctors have to Google it before they meet you. So you are an expert in your experience. And don't let anyone make you feel otherwise.
Mm-hmm. All right. Thank you so much for talking on my podcast today. And just to end off now, I would like to thank you so much for joining me today, Marie, and sharing your story and really helping me spread awareness and advocate for rare diseases and conditions.